Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please don't call unless we ask for specific callers, because we have this evening Dr. Rima Labo. We're going to be talking about the Codex Alimentarius. And this is a program that is being suggested internationally, although I suspect it probably originated here in the United States. And it has to do with the regulation of your ability to buy vitamins and minerals and food substances, and this idea that the government knows best, or perhaps the people who control the government know what's best for your health. Now, I believe there are an awful lot of people in America today who are healthy because they're not going along with what they're told. They're using vitamins and minerals and building up their immunity, and they're studying health and health matters, and they're getting to the scientific studies that are readily available out there that tell us that large doses of vitamin C really can help us as far as our heart and our immunity and so many of the other things, CoQ10, alpha lipoic acid, and we can go down the list of various products that are out there. But these are all going to be regulated by the government, and there is the legislation known as the Deshaies Act, which of course is said, it was passed at the national level, that there would be, in essence, no regulation of these items, that they were considered food substances, nutrients. But there are those people who would want to negate that because they want to control you and your health and your family and your future. So, well, that is the background. Dr. Rima Labo is a practicing physician, but she and her husband have given up what they were doing to try to get people to understand what is happening to our health freedom. Thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Why don't you just tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself and what the threat is to them and their families?
Well, I'd be delighted to. First of all, I graduated from medical school in 1970. I was graduated from the Albert Einstein College of Medicine in New York, and I was trained in psychiatry and child and adolescent psychiatry. And I practiced drug-free psychiatry for 20 years. And then I became involved with neurobiofeedback, which is another way of helping the body to regulate itself, and with nutritional medicine as a specific discipline, and with environmental medicine. And along the way, I've also been using frequency medicine to try to help people not only stay well, but become well when they have lost their ability to heal themselves, by doing a whole host of natural things that help people regain the ability to heal themselves, because we can heal ourselves. Now, along the way, in those 35 years, I have been watching the onslaught of Codex and other attempts to take away our health freedom. And Codex Alimentarius is perhaps the most terrifying of all of them, because it's an international trade commission created by the United Nations in 1962 to control all food. Codex is not only about regulating all vitamins, minerals, and nutrients so that they are only available at ultra-low, ineffective doses. It is also designed to make clean, wholesome, unadulterated food unavailable legally worldwide.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Our guest is Dr. Rima Labo. And this sounds incredible. Well, it is incredible. The trouble is, it's true. And there really are things that are happening that are going to be hazardous to your health. Well, why don't you go ahead and pick up the story from there?
Okay.
Go ahead.
I'd be happy to. So, having watched these many attempts to take away our health freedoms, to limit the ways we can treat ourselves when we become ill, to make it more and more difficult for people to choose natural health options, because let's face it, Dr. Stan, the pharmaceutical industry does better when people are sick than when they're healthy.
But, you know, that's so hard for people to believe that anybody would be so crass and indifferent and uncaring that they would really want to be people to be sick. And yet, all we have to do is look and see what's happening. A cancer is on the rise. Heart disease is on the rise. Diabetes is on the rise. You know, if we're trying to make people healthier, we're doing a pretty poor job. But if we're trying to make people sick, we're doing a great job.
Well, you know, you and I are both MDs, and we were both trained in the mechanisms of treating people who have become sick. We were not trained in helping people stay well, and we were never trained in the mechanisms of curing disease, because that is not part of Western allopathic medicine, unfortunately. Western allopathic medicine relies extraordinarily heavily on drugs. And while drugs are very, very useful in acute situations, in an automobile accident, a heart attack, the kinds of immediate life-threatening situations where something has to be done to bang the body back into survivability, so to speak, that is not the situation in the chronic degenerative diseases which are killing us, heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes. These diseases are largely preventable and are absolutely not well treated by pharmaceuticals. Not at all. These diseases are best prevented and treated by nutritional medicine, by clean, unadulterated food, by moderate and modest eating habits, by exercise, and by the simple things that people can do to regain or to maintain the ability to be well. Drugs don't have any place in the reasonable management of chronic diseases. They only suppress symptoms. They never cure chronic disease. And yet, the propaganda machine of the pharmaceutical industry has captured the mentality not only of the general public, but also of physicians as well, who really believe that they're practicing good medicine when they dispense pharmaceuticals at an astounding rate. Do you know what the national studies show the average amount of time is?
Hold that thought right there, please. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Labo is really talking about the amount of medicines that are being prescribed in America today. Now, there are certain times when medicine, you have somebody who's acutely ill, why, you certainly want to treat them and try to get them feeling better, but you know, there's so many things that we're giving today to people. Oh, my goodness, you know, your cholesterol is 200. Why, we've got to get that down to 160 or 170. You know, we really want to get your cholesterol down. And yet, of course, if you look in the PDR, and we'll be glad to send a free copy of it to anybody who requests, the PDR, Physician's Desk Reference, on Crestor, and those of you who watch television regularly will see this blue spiral staircase with a fellow coming down the spiral staircase, and on each stair there is a lower number for cholesterol. You have to get your cholesterol down, and just momentarily up on the screen, they flash something that says it's something about placebo. It's there for one frame, and you never see it again. What does it say? Well, I've watched it time and time again. I can never figure out what it says, but there's something there that they're telling you. Well, if you read the PDR, you will find out that the company that manufactures Crestor says there is no evidence that our product, and they use a generic name, influences cardiac morbidity or cardiac mortality. Now, they use these big words, figuring that the average person will never understand what they're saying. They're really saying morbidity is illness and mortality is death. There's no evidence that our product influences cardiac morbidity or mortality, but they intersperse that with three pages of fine print and nobody's going to read it. Most doctors have never read what the claims for Crestor are, and all the glowing claims and the very educational organizations financed by the drug company to tell you how important statin drugs are. They will tell you there's no evidence this is going to influence either cardiac disease or cardiac death. So pick up the story there.
What it does influence is the bottom line for the pharmaceutical industry, the single most profitable industry in the history of mankind. Why pharmaceuticals are actually more profitable than war, as hard as that is to believe. So we have an industry that has captured the media by buying it. You know, we don't have a free press. We have a very, very expensive press. And largely that press has been purchased by the multinational corporations. And at the head of the line, we have the pharmaceutical industry. Fox News last year received $2.3 billion in pharmaceutical advertising, just Fox News alone. So can you imagine the amount of money that the pharmaceutical industry spends on advertising? It also spent last year $758 million admitted dollars on congressional lobbying. You do the math. We have approximately 520 senators. How much money is that that they admitted they spent per senator? So we have a society in which drugs are the norm. We have a society in which approximately 40% of children are on prescription medications, in which 44% of adults are on prescription medications. And God help us, the new mandatory mental health screening legislation mandates that every child in America between the ages of 0 and 18 be screened for alleged mental illness and medicated with or without the consent of their parents if the inaccurate and imprecise and invalid screening techniques indicate that the child has, quote, a problem of any sort.
I love the how they use terms. They call this new mental health screening the New Freedom Initiative. Now, compulsory screening and treatment, what does that have to do with freedom? Absolutely nothing, but they're creating a perception in the minds of the people. We're here from the government. We're to help you. The New Freedom Initiative is actually compulsory health mental screening. So, I mean, it is so incredible that what they're able to do with the minds of the American people who never have a thought after all things are so good and we'll just go along. We won't rock the boat. But what we're really talking about is the health and the mind and the very souls of our children.
And by the way, let me make it very clear, as a psychiatrist, as an adult, child, and adolescent psychiatrist, let me make it very clear that these drugs are not safe, that they can be lethal, that they change the developing nervous system of the child in ways that have never been studied. We don't know what they do. That the longest tests are the longest clinical trials are 13 weeks. Most clinical trials are 6 weeks. And that any child who has a problem, a suicidal change, a violent change, or a physical or epileptic problem from these drugs is basically out of luck, because once the damage is done, it is done. So we're talking about compulsory medication of children, whether or not their parents wish them to be medicated. We're talking about children being taken away from the custodial care of their parents should the parents object to their medication. We are talking about, unfortunately, precisely the same thing that the Soviet Union did, and which the American Psychiatric and the Association condemned so roundly, when they used psychiatric medication and psychiatric treatment and psychiatric torture to treat, quote, political dissidents. We are making sure that our children never get to the point where they will be political dissidents by making it more and more difficult for them to think. And, oh, by the way, the New Freedom Initiative, and many people do not realize this, also provides for the mandatory screening and medication of every adult in America. We are using medications to subdue and control the minds and the souls and the brains of an entire population.
What purpose? I thought they were just going to start out with the teachers and government employees and then later get to the rest of us.
The mandate allows them to screen everyone. The question is, how do they choose to initiate the screening, and where do they choose to start? We are, and oh, by the way, the Phoenix Bureau of the United States Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, issued a pamphlet in which they stated that people who are who question the United States Constitution and suggest
who support the Constitution.
To the Constitution and who talk about the need to protect it from the UN, from the U.S. government, or from the UN, should be considered to be potentially murderers and potentially terrorists and, by extension, mentally unstable. Now, what does that mean? That means that people who raise questions that the government does not want them to raise will be medicated, will be incarcerated, and will be subdued chemically. And that is exactly what the Soviet Union did, and we roundly condemned them. Well, here we are, 20 years later, with the same law on our books, and states like Illinois already implementing the New Freedom Initiative, God help us, and the so-called teen screen.
I guess that's why Mikhail Gorbachev is so comfortable over here in the United States, and why when he puts on his State of the World Forum meetings, we find people like George Shultz, James Baker III, George Herbert Walker Bush, Mabiki, ruler of South Africa. If anybody'd like to see the list of the people who attended the last State of the World Forum meeting, we have it. All the leaders of the world come subservient to that great American patriot, Mikhail Gorbachev. And if you'd like to see that, actually those pages, we actually have them from the State of the World Forum meeting, and we have to ask ourselves, why are all these people either on the board of directors or participating in attending Mikhail Gorbachev's State of the World Forum meetings held here in the United States? What's the relationship between the former dictator of Russia and the leaders of this country today? Or maybe, is it possible they are all working towards the same goal, the same objective? If you'd like to see the material we got from the State of World Forum, we'd be glad to send it to you. If you give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Well, I for one, Dr. Stan, would be very, very interested in receiving that material, because I think that it's part of the problem. The problem is not Codex alone. The problem is not the New Freedom Initiative alone. The problem is not the abuse and betrayal of Americans' veterans and their exposure to depleted uranium and mycoplasma that was genetically engineered and so on and so on. The problem is that all of these things are part of the same program to control us, to subdue us, and to make us completely biddable by overwhelming and by weakening us.
Well, I fear that you are absolutely right. In fact, as Bertrand Russell said, through diet, diet injections and injunctions will be used in combination to control the attitude of the minds of the children so that they will never have a thought contrary to what the authorities would have them think. And that comes from page 50 of his book, The Impact of Science on Society. If you want to check it out, check it out. Or if you want to get a copy, why, we can send you a copy of that page from his book. They're going to use diet, injections, and injunctions to control the minds of our children. Gee, I wonder what they're putting in the diet. I wonder what they're putting in the injections. 1953, The Impact of Science on Society. We'll be back here in just a moment with Dr. Rima Lebo as we begin talking about already what is happening in our society. But, of course, one of the greatest threats to your health and your freedom is the Codex Alimentarius, which incidentally was part of the CAFTA legislation that the Bush administration spent $50 billion, to bribe Republican congressmen to vote for. The public was against it. The polls, 90% of the American people were against it. But spending $50 billion for bribes, they got the legislation passed. If you don't believe it, give us a call. We'll be glad to provide the documentation. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest, Dr. Rima Lebo. We're talking about Codex Alimentarius. And, of course, any discussion of this new system of laws gets into all the other things that they're doing today, such as the New Freedom Initiative, the terrifying effect of some of the psychotropic drugs on the minds of our children. And they knew that, of course, children on Prozac, young children, were suicidal. And yet they refused steadfastly for over a year. The FDA refused to put even a warning on the slip there that it goes out with every prescription, warning parents of the suicidal tendencies that would come from the use of an untried drug on the minds of our children. Criminal activity, but then nobody ever goes to jail when you work for a major corporation like the pharmaceutical industry. Go ahead, Reed.
Let me remind your listeners, Dr. Stan, that if they would like more in-depth information on Codex, and I certainly hope they would like it, they can go to the Natural Solutions Foundation website at www.healthfreedomusa.org.
Now, give that one more time. What's the website?
Healthfreedomusa.org. And let me point out that the name says it all. We're talking about health freedom in the United States of America, because under Codex Alimentarius, when we are, quote, harmonized, and I suggest you capitalize the first four letters of that word, H-A-R-M, once we are harmonized with Codex Alimentarius, we will have no natural health options in the United States. Clean, unadulterated food will be illegal, not just unavailable, but illegal. The nutrients and vitamins, which our own law, DSHEA, classifies as foods, and therefore items which may have no upper limit set upon them, will be illegal, and I'll explain how that happens. Codex Alimentarius is a trade commission which was created in 1962 by the United Nations. It was the brainchild of the president of IG Farben. He was sitting in jail after having been convicted of crimes against humanity at the Nuremberg war trials. The president of IG Farben said, okay, well, that didn't work. Nazism failed. Let's try something else. Oh, I've got it. How about if we control the world's food supply? Then we can control the world. So he had plenty of time on his hands to think about this in jail. And when he got out of jail, he was still a very powerful man, and he sold this idea to the United Nations. And they created this trade commission called Codex Alimentarius, which is Latin for food rules. And indeed, food does rule. If you control food, you control history. So they created the Trade Commission with the purpose of setting up regulations to control everything that can legally go into your mouth that is not a drug. And they have been setting food regulations forth since then. Now, in 1994, the World Trade Organization was created out of what you may remember as GATT, the Global Agreement on Tariffs and Trades. And when President Clinton signed us into the World Trade Organization, he signed us into the end of our sovereignty.
Hold that thought right there for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Dr. Rima Lebo, and she was basically talking about how this whole idea of Codex came about. And she says it was the brainchild of the head of IG Farben, who, of course, is one of the great supporters of Nazism, was tried and convicted at Nuremberg and sent to prison. And he conceived of this idea of controlling the world food supply, controlling what we ingest, and he eventually sold this to the United Nations when he got out of prison, and it became a trade association, which is known as Codex. And it was an international organization under the United Nations. And, of course, once we entered the World Trade Organization, WTO, why we became at least partially subject to this whole trade concept, which will mean that a group of bureaucrats will control and tell you what safe food is, certainly which of the vitamins and minerals and things like that, and how much you should take, and really will control every aspect of food. And let me tell you, of course, that food with a genetically modified food is frankly dangerous. In Europe, why, they're allowed to let the people know and choose whether they want to take genetically modified food. Here in the United States, they don't allow that. In a free society, you're not allowed to know that the milk you're drinking has been created with the recombinant bovine growth hormone, and you're going to be getting that when you drink the milk. People who want to put on their carton saying, we have no recombinant bovine growth hormone in our milk, they're not allowed to do that. Oh, no, we couldn't do that. Why that would get people the feeling there was something wrong with the RBGH. And we can't know that we're eating genetically modified corn. And, of course, every kernel will have products in it that will kill caterpillars and other things. If they'll kill caterpillars, what do they do to human beings? Go ahead. Why don't you pick up the story there?
Well, let me tell your listeners, Dr. Stan, exactly what Codex will do. And remember, once a standard is ratified by the Codex Alimentarius Commission, if a country is not Codex compliant, then any trade dispute in which they are brought before the World Trade Organization is automatically decided against them if the trade dispute is around food, even if the dispute has no merit whatsoever. Then huge trade sanctions are applied against the country. So every country in the world is rushing as fast as it can to get rid of anything standing in the way of becoming Codex compliant.
And what we've done is we've lost our national sovereignty. It doesn't matter what our Congress wants. It doesn't matter what our president wants, although I wouldn't say that our president isn't going right along with this. He's going to protect his health but not yours. But we've lost our ability to determine the future of our nation because it's all about destroying sovereignty and bringing us under the control of international
exactly.
bodies that have a different agenda, a different worldview.
Exactly. Now, let me tell you what Codex specifically will do that will change your life. First of all, Codex has classified nutrients as toxins. We classify them as foods, but as toxins, Codex says we have to use the science of toxicology to come up with the tiniest doses possible so that no vitamin or mineral will have any impact on anybody who takes it. Therefore, Codex will mandate chronic undernutrition for the entire world, including the United States, making any clinically effective dose of a vitamin or mineral or nutrient illegal, in the same way that heroin is illegal. No prescription will get you these things. They will be illegal. Second of all, every cow on the planet that's used for milk must be treated under Codex with Monsanto's recombinant bovine growth hormone. Must. There will be no legal hormone-free milk. Thirdly, the United States is pushing, and the United States gets what it wants in Codex. The United States is pushing to make the entire rest of the world have the same lack of labeling that we do here in the United States. We're the only country in the world that has unlabeled use of GMOs because everybody else in the world wants to know when they're eating these dangerous genetically modified foods. Here in the U.S., no labeling. Therefore, the entire world will have genetically modified foods and there will be no way to protect yourself from them.
And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, these are dangerous. I mean, I've studied this. I didn't want to believe this sort of thing. But we've got the book, Seeds of Deception. We've got a four-tape set. And we've got the book, GMOs, Beware the Genetically Modified Foods. We've got all sorts of information. You can go up on our website and read about genetic engineering and the terrible danger this is to you. But you see, you're not to be allowed to know. You're not going to hear this discussed on 60 Minutes, and if they did say something that was true, they'd simply take it out the next time they would show that program. And I found out the other day in one of the programs they had. The first time they showed a program on it, they had a certain message. They showed the same one, and they just simply deleted part of it. I got the transcripts if anybody wants to see them. This is how they control what the American people think. And, of course, we're talking about your health. Well, why don't you just pick up the story right there?
So, Codex will introduce unlabeled GMOs to the rest of the world. Genetically modified organisms will require the treatment of all dairy cows with bovine hormones, will make illegal, clinically effective nutrients and supplements. Codex sets pesticide residues that are, and fungicide and other toxic residues, veterinary drug residues in food, sets levels that are absolutely incompatible with human longevity and human health. For instance, in 2001, the Stockholm Convention was signed by 176 countries, in which 12 of the most deadly pesticides and organic chemicals known were banned from the planet. Nine of those 12 POPs, or persistent organic pollutants, were pesticides. Codex makes the use of seven of those pesticides legal again, in spite of the fact that they're illegal here in the United States and in most of the rest of the world. Countries that try to keep pesticide-ridden food out will be guilty of trade violations, and here we go back to the World Trade Organization's trade sanctions will be slapped on them. So you can be sure that industry will be pushing very hard to get rid of them. Every animal used for food, whether it has fins, feet, or feathers, must, under Codex, must be treated with antibiotics and with growth hormones. That means there will be no unadulterated animal used for food in the world. Codex goes on and on and on and on, setting standards that are good for industry, very good for industry, and bad for people, bad for health. Under Codex, the World Health Organization and the Food and Agriculture Organization, which are the parent administrative and funding bodies of Codex at the request of the UN, those two organizations estimate that when Codex goes into global implementation, December 31st, 2009, that the first result will be, at a minimum, the death of 1 billion people from starvation.
No, who estimates that? Who is
the World Health Organization and the Food and Agriculture Organization. When you do the numbers of what they estimate will happen because of the chronic undernutrition, first of all, approximately 1 billion people.
Hold that thought right there, please. Well, Dr. Stan and our guest this evening, Dr. Rima Lebon, and she is basically talking about the fact that there will be no right to protect our population from toxic pesticides. And under the Codex, why pesticides who have been outlawed worldwide will suddenly become legal, and you won't be able to stop them. And then, of course, furthermore, there will be basic problems as far as undernutrition throughout the world, and will lead to massive death. Now, where can people actually check that fact? Could you go into a little bit of the background? For our listeners out there, you have to understand there are people who really believe there are far too many people in the world. We would be better off having about 2 billion people in the world. Those of you who heard me talk on the Georgia Guidestones, and maybe you've never been to Alberton, Georgia to see them, but there they talk about, there in this occult monument, the cult stone monument, they talk about how we will maintain the world population at 500 million in constant balance with nature. What they're really talking about is elimination of over 90% of the world's population. There really are people who have a different worldview. How would they implement it? Well, could you go into the background of how you anticipate, at least initially, this would lead to the deaths of about a billion people?
I sure will, but let me give you the rest of the estimate, okay?
Go right ahead.
So we have a minimum of 1 billion people dying from simple starvation. The next thing that is anticipated to happen is that approximately 2 billion people, that's with a B, that's for big and bad, another 2 billion people are anticipated to die not from starvation, but from the chronic diseases of undernutrition that people are succumbing to now. They will succumb in larger numbers. Those diseases are heart disease, stroke, cancer, diabetes, MS, and all of the other diseases that people get when they do not have sufficient nutrients and they are overburdened with toxins. Remember, the food supply will be toxic. And so these figures, by the way, do not come from one source. They do not come from a report that says, guess what, Codex is going to kill 3 billion people or more. They come from doing the numbers, doing the calculations contained in documents like the joint FAO WHO document issued in 2002 on the role of nutrition and diet in the treatment and prevention of chronic diseases. And you can find that on my website, www.healthfreedomusa.org. And by the way, I do a blog daily, except when I'm traveling in a region like I am now, where I couldn't find a computer hookup, but ordinarily I do a daily blog update.
Let's get that website once again. Go ahead. What's your website?
It's www.healthfreedomusa.org.
Healthfreedomusa.org. So, go there, and you actually have at least the World Health Organization charts there and information saying how important good nutrition is?
Yes. I also have an article in the in-depth information section called Nutrition and Risk Assessment, a Toxic Brew, which explains how, since nutrients are classified as toxins, the Codex Alimentarius Committee on Nutrition and Foods for Special Dietary Uses came to the conclusion that as toxins, we must be protected from them in the same way that we are protected from other toxins. Now, the irony is they're not protecting us from other toxins. They're allowing them because the chemical industry, the pesticide industry, has prevailed upon Codex to allow astounding levels of toxic materials, including veterinary drugs and pesticides and so on, in our food. So the things that are not toxic, we're being forbidden to have. Those are nutrients. The things that are toxic, we are being laden with, and our food is being adulterated with the permission of Codex, which is not concerned with consumer protection, but is concerned with multinational profit.
Well, now, do you think there may be another agenda? Because, after all, if they were to kill off half the world's population, they wouldn't make as much money. So why would they be doing what they're doing?
Well, you would think that any good capitalist would understand that you want the market to survive so that it can be a bigger market.
Right.
Right?
That seems to be almost self-contradictory or self-defeating. Do you think there might be another agenda?
Many people conclude from the information that I've been sharing with you, Dr. Stan, that there is a population control agenda. And I can't say they're wrong. However, I do not have the data that says here is the conclusive evidence that shows that Codex is entirely is entirely focused on population reduction. It seems a reasonable conclusion, but I don't have that information. Nobody has brought me into the inner sanctum and said, sit down, Dr. Labo, and we'll explain to you what we're really up to. So we have to conclude that there is no love for the population numbers that we have, because these measures will certainly bring about widespread, needless, preventable suffering and death. However, I would like to introduce something that's rather current at the moment, and it's very, very important, and that is the agricultural spending bill. Now, that may not sound like it's very interesting in terms of codex, but remember that any protective legislation here in the United States, like DSHEA, like the ban on pesticides that we were talking about, or the organic standards that govern organic farming and the raising of organic animals, those standards protect us. Those laws protect us from harmonization with codex, and therefore they have to be gotten rid of in terms of the codex people's thinking. And so right now, this very week, there is an amendment being floated to the agricultural spending bill, which would completely gut and destroy the organic farming standards in this country. It would allow the use of antibiotics and veterinary drugs in organic animals. It would allow the use of non-organic feed in organic animals. It would allow the introduction of synthetic materials, unlabeled, into organic foods. It would allow the adulteration and dilution of organic standards. And as it happens, those very same adulterations happen to bring us into compliance with the weak and meaningless organic farming standards that Codex has promulgated. What do you know? The American organic farming standards, some of the best in the world, are being undermined and adulterated this very week in order to bring us into compliance with the Codex standards. And guess what? Almost no one in Congress has ever heard of Codex Alimentarius. So when they allow these protective standards to go down, they have no idea that they're opening the way for us to be literally slaughtered by these foods.
Now, is there anybody back in Washington, D.C. who's lobbying the congressman to explain to them what Codex Alimentarius
is? I'm trying very hard. We had a congressional briefing that was supposed to take place on September 20th about Codex. And we were sending emails to congressional offices telling them they needed to attend this briefing. But lo and behold, about 10 days before the briefing, I got an email at 2 o'clock in the morning saying, guess what? There's going to be a briefing, but it's not going to be about Codex. Oh, well. And so we are hoping that we can have another congressional briefing that really is about Codex this time. And we do have some friends in Congress. We need more friends in Congress. But Congress can't be our friend until they know about Codex.
And I think it's important that people learn about it and then start writing and emailing their congressmen, certainly email, faxing their messages, calling on this. This is a major problem. This is one of the major objections to the CAFTA agreement. And, of course, CAFTA then, once, of course, the Bush administration got that through, and it cost them $50 billion in promises to the congressmen for benefits for their areas so they'd get reelected, and whoever knows what other threats, but $50 billion that they spent, $1 billion, to get that through. CAFTA then was the opening for Codex to come and become the law of the land here.
May I take a different view of
right,
that,
go right ahead.
Dr. Stan, because the exact same language that was in the CAFTA bill, and I happen to think CAFTA was a terrible idea for the United States. I'm by no means in favor of it, but it's not a health freedom issue, because the same language that was found in CAFTA, word for word, was found in NAFTA and will be found if we are unfortunate enough to have FTAA pass. It is boilerplate language that always appears in any agreement, any trade agreement between WTO member countries. The question is not whether Codex was mentioned. Of course it was mentioned, along with the sanitary and phytosanitary agreement, the technical barriers to trade agreement, the xenobiotic convention, the biodiversity convention. All of these agreements are going to be in every WTO trade agreement. However, the question is, what is Codex? If Codex is a pro-health thing, then that's fine. We don't mind that. If, on the other hand, Codex continues to be the pro-illness set of regulations that it is, then we really do want to either reform it or to kill it. And I should tell you that in 2002, the two parent organizations, the World Health Organization and the Food and Agriculture Organization, were so upset with Codex that they commissioned a joint consultants report. The results of that report were made available to the Codex Alimentarius Commission in Rome, which I attended. Now, the original result was a recommendation to kill Codex, but that was jumped upon by the industrial interests that run Codex, and so that was watered down to 20 suggestions, 20 recommendations, number 18 of which was, and I quote, Codex should determine whether it has a relationship to nutrition, and if so, what that relationship is. The chairman of the meeting, Dr. Slorach, gaveled the discussion shut and would not permit any discussion of whether or not Codex had a relationship to nutrition. The representative of the World Health Organization, Dr. Kirsten Leitner, was livid, and she said, the reason that Codex has not had an increase in its budget from the World Health Organization is because, and I quote, in its 42 years of existence, Codex has failed to make a contribution to human health, end quote. The chairman gaveled that discussion shut. The next day, the representative of the World Health Organization and the Food and Agriculture Organization again expressed displeasure with Codex and said that the Codex Alimentarius Commission would implement the World Health Organization global strategy for diet, physical exercise, and nutrition, which is a pro-health document. And the chairman gaveled that discussion shut as well. So there is a war between the industrial forces driving Codex and the health forces in the international bodies that are appalled by Codex. That's wonderful news for us. It means that the louder we raise our voices, the more impact we have in turning the tide so that we can either control or kill Codex.
Well, I would rather kill a Codex and have it gone once and for all.
Perfectly okay with me.
And, of course, have the DeSay Amendment stand there so that we can buy, if we want to, alternative foods, substances, and certainly nutritional substances, and that our health would be our business rather than that of the federal government. Because if the federal government is really protecting our health, why is the incidence of diabetes and asthma and autism and cancer and diabetes, why are all of these things increasing at really astronomical levels? And all we can say is, if they're trying to protect our health, they're doing a terrible job. If they have a genocidal agenda, they're doing a great job.
Exactly. You know, people say the FDA is not doing a good job. The fact of the matter is that the FDA is doing exactly what it was created to do. Article 16 of the enabling legislation of the FDA says that its job is to promote, protect, and promulgate the pharmaceutical industry. They're doing a great job. However, we have some tools available to us. One of them is the power of purchase. Now, the Natural Solutions Foundation is creating the Eat Safe, Eat Smart boycott. A boycott tells you what not to buy. A boycott tells you what to buy. And in the next few days to weeks, we will be putting up a website that gives you information about what is safe to buy, what are the options for the things that you enjoy. If you want chips, there are safe, non-GMO chips. It would be better not perhaps to eat those chips, but if that's what you want, eat safe ones. If you want chocolate, if you want meat, if you want whatever you want, there are safe alternatives. and it's far better to spend a little extra on organic food and make sure that it is truly safe and wholesome than to spend that money on copays and hospital bills later. And that's the choice that you have. So the more of a market, a sustainable market, we create for healthy, clean food, the more strength that market has to defend itself and to keep us healthy. So that's one of the activities of the Natural Solutions Foundation, and you can find out more about that at www.healthfreedomusa.org. And oh, by the way, if you would like to donate, that's dandy, because that is our only source of income. We have no industrial ties, we have no commercial ties, we have no corporate ties. We depend on people valuing what we're doing enough to actually share their resources with us as we share the resource of knowledge with you.
And, of course, you've actually given up your medical practice and to be full-time in this?
I have indeed.
And what about your husband? Was he a physician as well?
No, my husband is a retired two-star general, and we work together. He's also quite an amazing healer. We work together in the practice until we decided that if we did not take on the body politic as our patient, we were all going to die.
All right. Well, this may sound incredible, but, ladies and gentlemen, it's not incredible. There really are evil people out there in the world. And we'll be coming back in just a moment or two to wrap up this evening program with Dr. Rima Labo, right here at Radio Liberty. Well, we have 3 minutes to wrap up this evening's program. So what are the most important things that you can tell our listeners in 3 minutes?
The first thing is that you need to know that this danger is facing you. Turning away from it, saying, nah, it can't be, I didn't hear it on the evening news, is a recipe for disaster. You must become informed. That's why I've created the website, www.healthfreedomusa.org. The next thing you need to do is to realize that you are powerful. Every email to Congress, every fax, every phone call is counted by Congress as equal to the voice of 13,000 other constituents. That's 13,000 people, 12,999 of whom were too bone lazy to go to the computer. That's the sorry state of our democratic process. But anyway, you can make a difference. Round up your friends. Tell your friends on your email list. Start a meetup. If you go to healthfreedom.meetup, meetup.com, healthfreedom.meetup.com, you will find a mechanism for setting up grassroots local units to get together with other people who are interested, share information, and become an effective political action unit. If ever the time for grassroots action to take care of our own needs and protect us and our children had come about, now is the time. Remember, if we don't do something about Codex Alimentarius, the next generation of parents will be the first generation in history, statistically, to see their children die before they do. That's how important this is. And then the third thing is to believe in the power of collective wisdom and the power of good. Truth has a resonance that lies do not. People understand truth when they hear it. Share the truth.
All right, fine. Well, I certainly think that we have a very real problem. It's not imaginary. There really are people out there that have a different worldview. And there really are people who believe, in my estimation, that there are too many people in the world. If anybody doubts that, they should go to my website and read my Population Control Agenda monograph, and we'll tell you a little bit more about that when we get back. But my guest this evening has been Dr. Rima Labo, who's given up her medical practice, and she and her husband are out on a campaign to educate the American people, traveling. This is the third time that she's been our guest here, and I want to thank you so very much for being with us and, of course, helping us get the truth out. Will you be home before long?
I will be home on Wednesday night.
Good night.
Thank you so much for having me.
Good night, and thank you so very much for being with us. Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and for those of you who may find it difficult to believe that there is a population control agenda, I suggest that you go on the Internet and order, pull down NSSM. That's the National Security Study Memorandum 200. NSSM, it's the official policy of the United States, published in 1974, top secret until it was declassified in the 1990s. You'll find the major thrust of American foreign policy is population control. For those of you who would like more information, you can go to my website, www.radioliberty.com, and pull down my Population Control Agenda monograph, where we simply tell you that people like Jacques Cousteau, and we'll actually send you the documents if you want to see them, Jacques Cousteau talked about the necessity of eliminating 350,000 people a day. I've been to Elberton, Georgia. I've seen the Georgia Guidestones. We have the publications of Barbara Marks Hubbard, one of the most wealthy women in the world, who talks about the necessity in the first stage of eliminating a quarter of the world's population. And as she says, that is not your job, my dear. That is ours, because we are the writers of the Pale Horse Death. We'll send you those pages if you have any question that what we're saying is true. You need to, get the information about the genetic engineering and go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And you can listen to our programs there 5 hours a day on the Internet directly or indirectly. You can pull down our newsletters. I suggest you get our newsletters on genetic engineering and on population control. That's genetic engineering and population control. You need to have the facts. You need to find out if your family is really in danger today. Could it be there are people who have created new diseases to kill off large numbers of people? Do you know that, for instance, in Botswana and in Swaziland today, 42% of the pregnant women are HIV infected, and they're all going to die? Now, that is either the world's greatest public health disaster or most successful genocidal policy. And what is the World Health Organization doing faced with this disastrous public health policy? Why, they're continuing the same policy. It must be working. Ladies and gentlemen, there really is evil in the world. There's a wonderful book. We'll be interviewing the author, General Romeo Dallaire. He was the Canadian general in Rwanda. He was asked when he returned from Rwanda, how can you still believe in God after what you saw in Rwanda? And his reply was, when I was in Rwanda, I knew there was a God because I shook hands with the devil. And that's the title of his book, Shake Hands with the Devil. We'll have him as a guest here in the very near future. Understand, we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. Remember, we are having our annual conference here at Radio Liberty. It will be on the 19th of November in Santa Cruz, the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. If you're interested in coming, please call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's the 19th of November. And, of course, pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. In Flanders Field, the poppies blow between the crosses, row on row, that mark our place, and in the sky the lark still bravely singing fly, scarce heard amongst the guns below. We are the dead. Scarce days ago we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved, and now we lie in Flanders Field. Take up our quarrel with a foe. To you from failing hands we throw, the torch be yours to hold it high. If ye break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders Field. And, of course, who was the foe? Take up our quarrel with the foe. Who was the foe? Who was behind the wars of the last century? Well, you listen to Radio Liberty. We'll tell you. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls unless we specifically ask for them, because right now we have with us Dr. Tim O'Shea. We're going to be talking about his book, The Sanctity of Human Blood. Vaccination is not immunization. This is the 9th edition I'm holding. I think I had the 3rd or 4th edition last time we had Tim on. But Tim has been going around warning about vaccinations. Now, vaccinations are just sort of like apple pie, you know, motherhood and apple pie. Everybody knows that vaccinations are good. In fact, you'll find many people who are critical of vaccinations saying, well, of course, I'm not against vaccinations, but I just want safe vaccines. And, you know, certainly if we just did this or that or the other thing, everything would be fine. And it's taken me a long time to come to the realization that maybe most of what we think we know just isn't true. Certainly, as we look at our children in America today, one in every six American children has either a neurodevelopmental or behavioral abnormality, according to the CDC. Never used to be like that. One in every six children in America has asthma. Never used to be like that. So many of our children have autoimmune diseases. They have allergies. The incidence of juvenile diabetes is growing and growing rapidly. We find an epidemic of pathological obesity in our children. We never saw this before. And when children from other countries immigrate to America and begin to take on our lifestyle and get the shots that American children do, they begin to develop many of the same diseases. Now, the government assures us that they have no idea why this is happening, but they also assure us that vaccines are perfectly safe. There's absolutely nothing to worry about, and anybody who suggests there's anything wrong with vaccines is, of course, labeled as a kook. Well, let's hear what Dr. Tim O'Shea has to say. Tim, thank you so very much for being with us again this evening.
Always a pleasure, Dr. Stan.
Well, why don't you tell our listeners how it was that you came to be so concerned about vaccines, and I know you're going all over the country giving talks on this, and, you know, I think the other side is really beginning to worry, because increasingly parents are beginning to question what they're being told by their doctors, by the medical establishment.
Yes. Well, I have a pretty extensive website on holistic medicine and natural health. It's, as you know, thedoctorwithin.com. And
now, is that the Doctor Within?
Yes, thedoctorwithin.com. And doctor is all spelled out.
Okay, go ahead.
And one of the first topics, it's been on the internet for about 7 years, and one of the first subjects that I studied and wrote about was antibiotics. And there's a pretty extensive chapter called The Post-Antibiotic Age. And I drew attention to the manufacturing of the superbugs by our policy of prescribing antibiotics for every little cold or sniffle that children get. And then after all this research, it was a four-month research project, I just wondered if this same system of disinformation could be in place with respect to vaccines, if maybe vaccines aren't really as healthy and as safe and as scientific as we're always told they are.
All right, fine. We're going to be back in just a moment with Dr. Tim O'Shea, and we're going to begin asking that very serious question. Are vaccines really safe? Are they saving lives? And what's the risk-benefit ratio? We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. All right, Tim, why don't you go right ahead?
Oh, okay. And so the first book I actually read, Dr. Stan, about 6 years ago was a book called 6-7 years ago, a book called Immunizations, The Reality Behind the Myth by Waleen James. And, you know, at that time, it told this story about problems with vaccines that have been known by scientists and by the CDC and by the FDA for years, and yet mainstream media and mainstream medical literature sort of glossed over this this point of view. And it was extremely well referenced. I read all her references, I read those references, and it became this interlocking web of information, very credible scientific and mainstream law data pointing to all the problems and the lack of science behind vaccines. And then I began to wonder, well, how could I be at this point in my life? I'm a doctor, I have 10 years university education, and without ever suspecting or having to answer any state board questions that even suggested that there was anything wrong with what we've always been taught about vaccines. So that started me down the road of researching, and I don't know, even today I see a lot of literature that sort of opposes vaccine conventional wisdom. It's not very well referenced and it's not very well written. So that was really the goal of my book, The Sanctity of Human Blood, to make a readable, extremely well-referenced source for people who might be doubting, you know, parents, young parents who might be doubting for the first time that there may be something wrong with vaccines, but they really can't get any solid data. And that's why my book is so good for these people to take a look at, because every single fact that I state is completely and thoroughly referenced right then and there, and there's over 300 references in the back of this small book.
All right, well, let's play the devil's advocate, Tim. Certainly, measles is a terrible disease, and we've pretty well eliminated measles since we started the vaccines, and we used to see measles encephalitis. We used to see children dying of measles. They die in other countries. Isn't measles vaccine been a wonderful thing here in America?
Well, that's the conventional wisdom. That's what you always, that's what everybody thinks until you actually start studying it.
And we're going to have to interrupt you there. We're going to have to go to the break. But I'll ask that same question when we get back, because I, of course, really had to see the original figures you referred to before I was convinced that you were absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is Dr. Tim O'Shea, he's written a fascinating book called The Sanctity of Human Blood, Vaccination is Not Immunization, and we were simply playing the devil's advocate and pointing out, look, the doing away with measles in this country has been a wonderful thing. I mean, children back at the turn of the century in 1900, tens of thousands of children died every year of measles. We had measles encephalitis. We had terrible complications from measles. And now that we've vaccinated children, measles doesn't exist in America. Certainly in other countries, measles is a serious problem. But here in America, we've almost done away with measles because of vaccination. And let's get Tim's response to that statement.
Well, the problem here is the way we think about measles is primarily conditioned by our conventional wisdom, what we're always taught, what we always see on TV, what we always read in newspapers. But if you begin to research just a little bit below the surface, you find from government documentation that I cite in my book, The Sanctity of Human Blood, number one, measles was 97% gone by the time the vaccine came out in 1978, the MMR vaccine. The other thing is that measles has always been a mild, self-limiting disease of childhood. You probably had it when you were a kid, right, Dr. Stan?
Right.
And I did, too. And for decades and longer, kids just you were sick for a few days, and then you got better. But the important thing was you had lifetime natural immunity to the disease, because you got it. Now, all of a sudden, here comes the late 70s, and the FDA is telling us, or the CDC, rather, is telling us, well, now, we have to vaccinate every child for measles, and the sales job was they said, if we don't do that, then 1 in 1,000 kids will get encephalitis or brain fever, and they might die. Well, as I point out in the book, that was a completely imaginary number. The real incidence was more like 1 in 100,000. But the problem was that the vaccine not only had other large side effects, major side effects from it, one of which was encephalitis, but the other problem was that we were vaccinating for a disease that was practically gone anyway and wasn't a very serious disease.
I think that's really what's so important. I had to go to a major library and get the international mortality statistics that you referred to, track them down, and of course they were put out by somebody named Michael Anderson, working for the government. He pointed out that in 1901, 11,956 children died, you know, of measles. By the time you got down to 1931, 2,900 children died of measles. By the time you got down to 1966, 44 children in America died of measles before we had the vaccine available. Now, when did they actually release the vaccine, do you recall?
1978.
Well, 1971 to 75, 17 children had died with measles. So measles was not a major problem before they introduced the measles vaccine, but they will never tell you that. And yet so many children today are autistic, and their story was, my child was fine until they had the MMR vaccine, and then of course they started getting this intense diarrhea, they began to regress, and of course the doctor Wakefield over in England had found, as they did colonoscopies on these children, that they had a measles with the same virus that they got from the immunization. They had a measles colitis, and these children were miserable, and many of them of course lost their ability to function, and we're talking about tens of thousands of children. And what happened to Dr. Wakefield? They went after him. They targeted him. They took away his license. They drove him out of England. Why? Because he told the truth about the harm that the MMR vaccine was doing. And you're not going to hear that discussed by certainly Rush Limbaugh or other establishment communicators. So pick up the story there, Tim.
Yeah. I tell the story of Andrew Wakefield in the book, as you know, Dr. Stan. And you know, talk about, this guy is the epitome of moral fiber, you know. He discovered he had a brand new hypothesis there in 1996. He was a famous gastroenterologist, a world-class gastroenterologist in London, and parents began to bring their autistic children to him, saying, Dr. Wakefield, it seems that our autistic children seem to have some weird bowel problem.
Yeah, they have intense diarrhea. I mean, this is a very important part of this whole symptom complex, was of the intense diarrhea that went with the mental regression.
Yes, but he also discovered that 96% of them had a condition in the colon called lymphoid nodular hyperplasia, an extremely serious inflammatory condition of the lining of the bowel in these infants. 96% of these autistic children have this inflammation, only visible in 4% of normal children.
And of course the thing was that it was caused by this same measles virus. He was able to grow it. But you see, they can't let the public know that. That's why they had to destroy Andrew Wakefield.
Right.
And anybody who speaks out and tells the truth, they're going to come after, if they possibly can. And they, of course, because he published it, he practiced in a country with socialized medicine, why then they could use the government to take away his license, to demonize him, to humiliate him, and he was forced to leave there, come to the United States. He can't get a license here, I don't think, but I know he's still continuing his research, trying to save the lives of children. But there are people who have a different agenda. That's what's so incredible about this story. And the fact that most people have never heard of Andrew Wakefield, or the fact that measles was not a problem, a major public health problem, at the time the vaccine was introduced, simply as a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. You pick up the story there, Tim.
I think it's important to note another serious problem with the measles vaccine, Dr. Stan, that always gets glossed over, and that is, well, you and I, we had measles as children, because we were, you know, at that time, right? So that means we have natural immunity for life for measles because we got the disease. Now, the problem is, since 1978, we've been vaccinating every child with the MMR vaccine, multiple doses, right? And what's happened now is, as we all know, we have this new version of measles, adult onset measles. It's a brand new sort of mutation of the original disease, which comes on, and we all know that if it comes on for the first time in an adult, it's a far more serious disease with far higher rates of complication and or death. Now, the problem is that you and I and other people who got measles as children may not now be immune to this brand new mutated form of measles that has come on the population since 1978, since we started disseminating the MMR vaccine. This is a big, big deal. The FDA, the CDC, or the National Institutes of Health never acknowledges, or no one is talking about this problem whatsoever.
All right. Well, I think there are a lot of problems out there they're not talking about. Certainly, they've never wanted to talk about the cancer virus that was in the original polio vaccine. They've never wanted to talk about the fact that the original yellow fever vaccine produced yellow fever. They haven't wanted to talk about the contraceptives that they slipped into the vaccine that they gave to people in third world countries. They haven't wanted to talk about the experimental vaccines that they've used on children in third world countries. They haven't wanted to talk about the fact that 75% of the homosexuals in San Francisco who took an experimental hepatitis B vaccine came down with AIDS, and most of them are dead.
Yep.
Why don't they ever want to talk about that sort of thing? What was in that experimental hepatitis B vaccine that was given in 1978, 1979, just before the first cases of AIDS occurred in San Francisco? And why was 75% of the San Francisco cohort come down with AIDS? Could there be something in the vaccine? Go ahead, Tim.
That's a very good question. And as you know, that a source that really discusses that question in great detail is Leonard Horowitz's book, Emerging Viruses.
Right.
I don't know. It's with the measles vaccine. It's not only did we not need the vaccine as a population, we already had this herd immunity; it was practically gone. But the other thing is that even getting the disease was actually a good thing for 99.99% of people, because it gave you natural immunity to the disease. We didn't need the vaccine, and the vaccine had all these side effects.
And, of course, the same thing was true with rubella. Almost every girl got rubella. And now, of course, if you take the vaccine and you don't get the rubella and you're pregnant, why, they're going to test you and they're going to find you have you don't have antibodies to rubella. They're going to give you the vaccination. And sometimes there are serious complications for the child if you vaccinate a pregnant woman for rubella vaccination.
Yes, yes. Dr. Stan, I think it's really important to talk about the number of vaccines that children are getting these days, because this number just changed significantly in February of 2005, and there has been no media on it whatsoever.
All right, fine. What have they brought in? They keep bringing in new vaccines all the time. Oh, we're here from the government, and we're here to help your child. And yet, why are children getting sicker? And why so many have serious mental problems?
Right.
So what else have they introduced here recently?
I've been doing this seminar for 6 years, and I've always been saying all this time that the mandated schedule of vaccines has included 40 vaccines by the time the children are 18 years old.
Now, that's 40 shots, isn't it? It's not 40 separate vaccines, is it?
No, it's 40 vaccines.
40 shots.
Some of them are triple shots, but it's 40 vaccines.
All right, fine. Go ahead.
And then suddenly in February of this year, with no media whatsoever, that 40 suddenly became 58, and that's what it is now.
And in other words, these are 58 different vaccinations that you have to get. Sometimes they combine them, though, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Oh, we'll be back in just a moment with Tim O'Shea. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Tim O'Shea. It's very interesting that the veterinarians are very concerned about the animals they care for. they have come to the conclusion they've been giving too many vaccines, and so they've cut back on the incidence, the number of vaccines they're giving to animals, but why they keep increasing the number we're giving to humans. So I guess we're not really quite as important as the animals. Have you run into that? We know that they took the thimerosal out of the vaccines they were giving to animals, but they left it in into the vaccines they were giving to our children. They took it out of the animals because it was toxic and damaging the animals' minds. They left it in the children's vaccine that they gave to our children. Well, we'll have to wonder why. Yes. Go ahead, Jim.
Talking about thimerosal, this is a really big story. I spend about an hour on mercury in vaccines in the live seminar. I want to mention, Dr. Stan, I now have the live seminar. It's on an audio CD set for people who can't attend the seminar in the cities I go to, and you can look at that at thedoctorwithin.com.
All right, thedoctorwithin.com is Tim's website, and he's got a lot of great information there. And if you can't get to his seminars, you need to get his information. And I've checked this out, and it is amazing information. And he convinced me it took me a long time to track down those figures from the government and find out that measles was literally a non-problem when they started the vaccine. Go ahead, Tim.
Well, specifically about thimerosal, we've known the FDA, the government, the National Institutes of Health, there's a ton of documentation proving that mercury is the third most toxic substance known to man. We know it's a serious neurotoxin. And I'm sure, didn't Russell Blaylock talk about that the other day?
Yes, but you go ahead and talk about it again.
Okay.
Repetition is so important, and people need to know that there are a lot of people out there who study this and are very concerned. So go ahead.
Okay, and mercury has been in vaccines since 1930 in the form of thimerosal, which is an organic form of mercury, which is the most toxic form of mercury known to man. It is 1,000 times more toxic than the mercury you see in your thermometer. Okay, so this neurotoxin we've been injecting into the formative circulatory system of our infants, you know, since the mid-40s. And there's been a lot of controversy since 1999 when the FDA recommended to the vaccine manufacturers to take thimerosal out of vaccines. And as you said, Dr. Stan, they actually ordered them to take thimerosal out of dog vaccines. But they never did it. The FDA never made thimerosal illegal, even to the present day. But since 1999, there has been so much media, so much public attention about thimerosal in vaccines, that suddenly, as of 2005, the manufacturers decided voluntarily to omit thimerosal from vaccines, from all vaccines except for the flu shot. That's the only vaccine on the mandated schedule that still is being manufactured with thimerosal in it today.
And, Chris, what about, are there any of the other adult vaccines, though, that do still contain thimerosal, like the meningitis or the others? Do you know?
Okay, here's how this works. As of 2004, including 2004, the DPT vaccine, the hepatitis...
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking about which vaccines now still have the thimerosal. Remember, thimerosal was so toxic that it was outlawed. You couldn't put it on the skin, but it was all right to inject into our children. It was taken out of the vaccines for the animals, but it was all right to give to our children. And so it was in 1999 that the FDA recommended that the thimerosal be removed from childhood vaccines. Never told them to do it. They told them to take it out for the animals because it was hurting the animals, but it was all right to give to our children. And then certainly by 2003, why most of the thimerosal was out of the vaccines. Apparently by 2005, it's out of all the childhood vaccines except the influenza vaccine, which we give to the elderly because there are too many elderly, and who are 6-month-old because they're a very immature neurological system, and we're giving them massively toxic doses. The child would have to weigh 270 pounds not to be affected by the toxic effects of the thimerosal we put in the influenza vaccine. Well, there are very, very few six-month-old children that weigh 270 pounds. At least I've never seen one. They know what they're doing. They just want the parents to know. Then I asked him, what about some of the other adult vaccines, like say, meningococcus or pneumococcal vaccines? Is there any thimerosal in those? Do you know, Tim?
Not as of 2005.
All right.
But as of 2004, thimerosal was still in the hepatitis B vaccine, the Haemophilus influenza vaccine, and it was also in the other one is the DPT.
All right. And now it's out by now?
One more thing is that 2 years prior to that, they pulled it out of polio vaccine. But the point here is, Dr. Stan, this is the point that people always miss. Since the FDA never made it illegal and never outlawed thimerosal, there are millions of doses of all of those vaccines that I just mentioned stockpiled, and they will store them indefinitely for decades. And since they were never outlawed, they can give those vaccines out to any child in any clinic across the United States anytime they want.
My understanding, though, is they're still giving it to children in the third world countries and the developed countries.
Yes.
They have not taken it out of the vaccines that they're giving to children in other countries. So if it's harmful, why are we giving it to children in other countries? Because in those other countries, we're beginning to see more and more autism all throughout the world that we never saw before we had so many vaccines with the thimerosal in it here.
That's right. And that's what Robert F. Kennedy talks about. We started exporting thimerosal-laden vaccines to China just a few years ago, and after just two or three years, suddenly they have 1.8 million cases of autism in China, and they never had that before.
Why would anybody do something that would hurt children? And that's so difficult for many people to understand. There really are people who have no compassion for children. To pick up the story there.
Well, that's a really good question, Dr. Stan, and that's why I do about a half hour in my live seminar about money. How much money, how the money gets allocated, where the money goes. And unfortunately, these tremendous economic forces are at work in determining vaccine policy, in determining and influencing which vaccines get approved by the FDA advisory committee and get tacked onto the mandated schedule.
Okay. So anyway, of course, they are giving the toxic vaccines, which, of course, they will not release here in America. They're giving it to children throughout the rest of the world. I would think that the people over there would be furious. Because if it's toxic in America, why isn't it toxic when we give it to children in third world countries? Or is it toxic, and is it that people here just don't care?
Of course, of course. This is what Robert F. Kennedy talks about in his June of this summer report called Deadly Immunity. I'm sure you saw that.
Right. Well, tell our listeners where they can see it, though.
Actually, you can just go to Google and just Google Deadly Immunity, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and it'll come right up.
Right, fine. Deadly Immunity, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and he is, of course, taking the lead in trying to get the information out, relying on the Kennedy name. I don't care what name he uses. What he writes is true, and you better understand that somebody is hurting your children and your grandchildren. We're going to be back in just a moment with Tim O'Shea. This is an amazing story, and you need to check it out and find if it's true. Would they put things in the vaccines that would be harmful to our children? Would they put cancer vaccines and viruses in the polio vaccine that would be producing or partly responsible for the explosion of cancer in America and throughout the world today? Are there people who have a different worldview, who have a different world vision, who worship a different God? We'll be back in just a moment here with Dr. Tim O'Shea, and we're going to tell you when we get back how you can get his material from him. The Sanctity of Human Blood is his book. Vaccination is not immunization. Well, Tim, why don't you go ahead and pick up the story there?
Okay, well, let's just tell people how to get the book. The brand new ninth edition of The Sanctity of Human Blood is available on my website, thedoctorwithin.com.
Thedoctorwithin.com, so you go there and check the website and get the other information that Tim has. I think it's important and well worthwhile getting. So pick up the story from there, Tim.
We were talking about Robert F. Kennedy and
right.
Chimerisol.
Right.
And, I excerpt this, his study in the book. I take the important points out of his study in the new book. But he's talking about, okay, there was a secret meeting. this sounds wacky, but this is really true. He has, meticulous documentation. There was a meeting in the year 2000 in Simpsonwood, Georgia, and who was invited to this meeting were the regulators, FDA people, representatives from the vaccine manufacturers, and some of the world's top scientists. And they all gathered there together. No one was allowed to bring any tape recorders or even any pens or pencils. They were allowed to take no notes at this meeting.
Now, this is really a top-secret meeting. In fact, everything was classified afterwards. Everybody was told not to discuss what was mentioned. So this was at Simpsonwood, Georgia, back at the Simpsonwood Resort in Georgia, yeah. Back in 2000. So what actually happened at that meeting? There were somewhere between 53, 55 people are there. Go ahead.
I'm glad you're familiar with it, Dr. Stan. Well, as you know, they met there to listen to the work of the recent research of one of the world's top scientists, Tom Vere Stratton, and he presented incontrovertible data that showed not only a relationship, but a causality between thimerosal in vaccines and autism. It was undeniable. It was in black and white, a connection that showed exactly how mercury in vaccine caused this tremendous epidemic of autism, which has, you know, just burst onto the scene in the last 15 or 20 years here. So instead of spending the meeting trying to figure out how to alert, you know, the nation to this new discovery and this new scientific research, instead they spent the rest of the meeting discussing how they were going to cover this data up. It is the most amazing story.
And it really is an amazing story, and we're going to be back here in just a moment with Tim O'Shea, and we'll tell you how you can get the report if you actually want to, as I did. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Tim O'Shea, and if you're interested in his book, The Sanctity of Human Blood, you go to his website, thedoctorwithin.com. That's thedoctorwithin.com. And it's a fascinating read. And, of course, we were talking off the air just a moment ago about a secret meeting that was held, sponsored by the Centers for Disease Control with your tax money. It was held in Simpsonwood Resort in Georgia back in the year 2000. And they had all the experts on vaccines, thimerosal there. Nobody, of course, from the general public was allowed to know. And no tape recorders were allowed, no notes were allowed to be taken, and they presented information put forward by Dr. Thomas Verstraten, who worked for the CDC, showing that there was definitely a relationship between thimerosal and these neurodevelopmental abnormalities, which would be not only autism, but the attention deficit disorders, ADHD, these other behavioral disorders and psychiatric neurodevelopmental abnormalities, which are plaguing our society. So there was no question there was a definite causal relationship. But the whole question was how, not we were going to let the people know, but how we were going to cover this up, even though in the transcript, at least one of the doctors said, well, none of my children are going to get this. And one of the others said, I had a new grandchild born last night. Oh, they're not going to get any vaccinations. But the rest of the theme was, how are we going to keep the public from knowing? The report was classified. You can actually find it up on the internet now. It is there because David Weldon, who's a congressman, actually put pressure on the CDC and Freedom of Information Act, You see, they don't want the common people to know what's going on. But eventually a report was released. I have a copy, but it's up on the Internet. It's a couple of hundred pages, but it's well worthwhile reading. It's the entire transcript of the meeting, and you'll find they knew back in 2000 how toxic this was. But the big question was, how are we going to keep the public from finding out the truth? After all, they wouldn't trust us anymore if we had found that, if they found out we'd been harming their children. So pick up the story from there, Tim.
So one of the ways that the, one of the ways that the cover-up was actually effected was that, in the year 2004, the Institutes of Medicine held this conference in which they were supposedly taking a look at the possibility of a thimerosal-autism connection. So what the Institutes of Medicine did was they invited 13 of the world's top scientists to come and present their data to the Institutes of Medicine. And as one scientist, but because of their busy schedule, you know, they only gave each one of these top scientists 20 minutes to talk about their specialty. The good news was, though, they did allow each scientist's complete monograph to appear on their website, so you could read it. But again, it was the same thing, Dr. Stan, as you know. It was incontrovertible scientific data proving a connection and an exact physiologic mechanism of how thimerosal causes the epidemic of autism, how it has happened. And the incredible thing was that the Institute of Medicine, after hearing all these scientists come forth saying the same thing over and over, the top neurological scientists in the world, the Institutes of Medicine concluded with their same mantra, we have concluded now that not only is there no definite proof that mercury causes autism, but incredibly this body now said this statement, that this subject is now closed and no further study should be conducted. No further study of this subject should be conducted. How can a scientific body make a statement like that?
Well, I think that sometimes we have the finest scientists that money could buy. What was really so interesting, that Thomas Verstappen, who worked for the CDC, immediately was hired by GlaxoSmithKline, that makes, there's the thimerosal latent vaccines that stands to lose billions of dollars in lawsuits if the truth ever comes out. So of all the scientists in the entire world that they could have hired, who did they hire but the one expert from the CDC who knew the truth? And then, of course, he eventually published an article in the Journal of Pediatrics, I think it was either in 2003 or 2004, where he said that he'd gone over the figures again and found that there was no relationship between thimerosal or no definite relationship. He sort of used words that would suggest that his original figures weren't valid, but maybe more studies should be done. But he actually lied. When he put it in, he said he worked for the CDC. No, he didn't. He worked for the company that was going to lose billions of dollars if the truth ever came out, GlaxoSmithKline. That was then used by the Institute of Medicine, saying, here's the man who did the study, and he says there's nothing there. Totally ignoring the fact he was not impartial. He was employed by one of the most powerful pharmaceutical companies in the world. He had left his employment. He had lied when he published his article in the Journal of Pediatrics. And, of course, that was just an oversight. I shouldn't have said I worked for the CDC. He knew. Of course he knew who he was working for, wouldn't you think, ladies and gentlemen? But this is how this whole thing is done. And we have hundreds of thousands of children with autism in America today. One in every 166 children now is autistic, and then so many more have the other neurodevelopmental abnormalities. So the one in six American children has autism, Asperger's disease, ADD, ADHD, mathematical difficulty, speech difficulty, some neurodevelopmental abnormality and or behavioral abnormality. One in six children. We've destroyed a whole generation of children. And the CDC is doing everything they can to cover up the truth. So pick up the story there, Tim.
I think at this point, Dr. Stan, I would like to say a couple words about exemptions, because so many people still believe the mantra unless your child is vaccinated, he can't get into school. And as you and I know, that statement is patently false. Because in every state, there exists three types of exemptions, and more parents are opting for this exemption because they're informing themselves. And those three types of exemptions, I discuss each one of them in my book, The Sanctity of Human Blood, Ninth Edition. The first, of course, they're medical, religious, and philosophical. Very briefly, a medical exemption is just if you get a medical doctor to write one sentence on a piece of paper, this child should be exempted from vaccines because they may be harmful to his health or damaging to his immune system. That child is exempt by law in every state. The second kind is a religious exemption, and this is sort of a general category where the parent signs a statement saying that vaccines are against their religious beliefs. And then that gets the child off the hook. And then the third type of exemption is what we have here in California, the philosophical exemption. That's the easiest of all, in which there's a simple one-sentence statement on the back of the child's vaccine records, the state records, and it just says, I hereby exempt my child from vaccines because they are against my philosophical beliefs. And the parent signs it and dates it, and that one signature is enough to get the child out of all vaccines for all of grade school and all of high school. And they keep these exemption forms secret. They'll directly tell people at the school, they'll directly tell people that there's no such thing or they don't exist. Until the parent walks in there with the signed form, then they shut up. Then they don't offer any more objections. But why are they doing that?
Are you suggesting that the people at the schools would lie to the parents?
A lot of times, Dr. Stan, I travel all over California, among other states, but I hear this over and over again. You know that blue card stock that is the childhood vaccination record? You know what I'm talking about?
Right, huh?
This exemption form, by state law, is supposed to be printed on the back of that card. And so many clinics do not print it. It's just blank on the back of that card. And I call this lying by omission.
All right. I think it's so important that if parents are going to have to decide whether they believe this, whether they think that the risk-benefit ratio is way out of proportion. But as far as I'm concerned, having studied this issue thoroughly, I do not trust the people who are making the vaccines, and I do not trust the CDC. And if they've managed to destroy the lives of 1 in 6 children, do you want to give them the chance to destroy your child's life or your grandchild's life? You need to find out if this is really true. And, of course, there's so much information up on the Internet, and you might very well start with Tim O'Shea's website, and, of course, there's nomercury.com. And all sorts of links there to all sorts of websites going into the background of the thimerosal scam. But remember, it's not that they... nobody wants to hurt children. They are still giving it to children all throughout the rest of the world, knowing full well it's going to destroy their minds. Why would anybody want to do something so totally evil? Pick up the story there, Tim.
That's the scary part of it. The bottom line is follow the money, you know, as it always has been. I have a chart in my book, The Sanctity of Human Blood, that shows this data. I'll just tell you this chart really fast. In 1975, we spent $10 per kid for vaccines. Okay? 1975, $10 per child. By the year 2004, that figure was up to $606 per child. The projection is, by the end of this year, that figure will be at almost $1,000 per child that we're spending. And this is the CDC's own figures. All these figures are documented meticulously in my book. So we went from $10 per child in 1975 to around $1,000 per child that we are spending for vaccines. And just this simple little chart should show people the tremendous financial economic motivation behind mandating every year more and more vaccines. I mean, when we were children, when some people who are in their 50s and 60s, when we were children, we got maybe 6 or 8 vaccines. And then if you're in your 30s or so, or 30s or 40s, maybe you got 25 or 30 vaccines. Today, children are getting 58 vaccines by the time they are 18 years of age. And the number, it's not going to stop there. It's continuing to rise.
Well, I think we have a fascinating chart on page 44 where you point out that in 1900, the incidence of cancer deaths was 50 per 100,000. Why, by the year 1990, it was up to well over 200 per 100,000. And I suspect it's continuing to rise since then, hasn't it?
Yes, yes. Before 1960, Dr. Stan, cancer was virtually unknown among children. And between 1960 and 1980, that's where you really saw this geometric rise of cancer among children. During those years, the number of vaccines tripled. And as long as we're talking about carcinogenicity, it's very interesting to note when you read the physician's desk reference, which is what the manufacturer states about what is in each vaccine. For each vaccine, you will read this statement. It says, this vaccine has not been tested for carcinogenicity.
This vaccine has not been tested for carcinogenicity. In other words, to determine whether it produces cancer, is that right?
Right. They state in black and white that they don't know whether or not the vaccine causes cancer. And they make that statement, Dr. Stan, in the PDR for each vaccine.
You would think that maybe they're covering themselves, because then, of course, if you could attribute the cancer to the vaccine, they can say, well, look, you knew ahead of time. Didn't you read the cancer? Didn't you read the package insert?
Yes. That's exactly why, you're exactly right, Doc. That's exactly why they stated. But the point is that people don't connect the dots here. If we don't know whether or not the vaccine causes cancer, then why in the world are we giving it to our infants?
And I think, of course, the idea of giving an infant in the nursery the hepatitis B vaccine that had 87 times the maximum amount of the most toxic substance known to mankind, mercury. That was what, 87 times the maximum amount of mercury allowed for the birth weight of that child. Why would they do something like that for a non-existent problem?
Right.
Hepatitis B is not a problem for the children in this country. The only people who get hepatitis B are homosexuals, prostitutes, people who are sexually promiscuous, and occasionally, and only occasionally, healthcare workers. And it's not something common among healthcare workers. And they made all the healthcare workers take the hepatitis B vaccine. And then they studied them, and they found that the incidence of multiple sclerosis in the nurses who took foolish enough to take the hepatitis B vaccine was 300% higher than those who didn't. Shucks, I wonder how that happened. Go ahead.
It's most amazing that the hepatitis B vaccine, in this country only, the only country on earth, the hepatitis B vaccine is mandated on the first 24 hours that the child is alive, the first day of life. No other country does that.
Well, and in fact, no other country has as low a level of hepatitis B as we have. So why are we giving to our children here?
Right.
But we're giving it to children all throughout the world, because there are 2 billion people throughout the world who've contracted hepatitis B, and you know how they got it? Most of them got it from dirty needles that were used giving vaccinations to protect the health of the people. Sounds incredible. Those figures come off of the World Health Organization website. Literally every child in the underdeveloped countries has had hepatitis B, and many of them are chronic carriers. And how did they get it? They got it from vaccinations, from the dirty needles that was used. Gee, shucks, if we're really interested in helping the children, you'd think that we could afford those clean needles. A penny a needle, it kind of costs $1 or $2 for the shot. Why couldn't we use clean needles?
Yes.
You have to ask yourself, is there another agenda?
Yes, and even the CDC's own data states that your chances of having a serious reaction from the hepatitis B vaccine is 100 times greater than for you actually getting hepatitis B. they state that the vaccine is 100 times more dangerous than the disease itself.
No, where can people get that? I wouldn't question it at all, but where is that actually listed?
I have the exact citation in my book, Ninth Edition, The Sanctity of Human Blood, under the Hepatitis B section. I think it's in the MMWR.
All right, fine. We will check that out, because I think that I have no question at all that the vaccine is far worse than the chances of getting in trouble with the vaccine. Far worse. It's one of the most dangerous vaccines we have because of molecular mimicking, because they use a gene for the vaccine that is actually the same as the myelin sheath of our nerves, and we make the body react to that gene, and it begins to attack the myelin sheath of all of our nerves. That's why there's so many neurological problems. Why would you do something like that? Why? Because the American people, of course, know that our government would never do anything to harm us, would it? We'll be back in just a moment here to wrap up this evening program with Tim O'Shea. Dr. Tim O'Shea has done a great job getting the truth out across America. Well, Tim, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay. For people who are sort of in shock over what you've heard for the last hour, I understand. I was there at one time. For the rest of you who may have who've had some kind of lingering, formless doubts that there may be something wrong with vaccines, but you're not sure what or you're not sure who to believe, what I state in the book, my opinion is this. Your kid, your infant, is too small to make this decision by himself. You have to make this decision for him. So in order to make that decision, you must get information, but information that is truly scientific and truly valid, and you cannot get that information from the people who make their living selling you the vaccine. So that's what my book, The Sanctity of Human Blood, Ninth Edition, hopes to do. It provides abundant data. Everything that Dr. Stan and I have just said in the last hour is meticulously documented, every statistic and every source. We didn't make this information up. So you have a responsibility, in my opinion, to your child to at least do a modicum, a small amount, a limited amount, a sufficient amount of studying in order to make this decision. You should feel good one way or another. I decided, yes, I will vaccinate my child, or I decided, no, I won't vaccinate my child. But you, the parents, you are the ones who have to make this decision for your child.
And I think it's a very important decision for you to make. I think that you must get the information. You must find out if it's true. Now, if it isn't true, you've got nothing to worry about. But if you destroy the mind of your child, and you end up with an autistic child, or one with one of these other neurodevelopmental abnormalities, what are you going to say? I mean, I've talked to so many parents that have these children, 11 years old, never spoken a word, still wearing diapers, violent. They don't know how to control them. The marriages are ruined. The lives of the parents are ruined. And, of course, the parents, only too late, found out it was from the vaccines. Check the facts out. Again, our guest this evening is Dr. Tim O'Shea. Tim, give your website just one more time.
You can get my book, The Sanctity of Human Blood, Ninth Edition, and the audio CDs at my website, www.thedoctorwithin.com.
All right, well, thank you so very much, and I do want to get you back on our other programs. I think you have a great deal of very, very important information. God bless you. Thank you so much for all the work you do, Tim, and for being out on the front lines, getting the truth out.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Always a pleasure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoyed the program that we gave. And, you know, when I first got started on this, I didn't want to believe any of the things we've talked about, but they're really all true. And not until you really understand that there is organized evil in the world, not until you understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle for the hearts and the minds and the souls and the bodies of our people. not until you understand the forces that are aligned against us, and that you have an obligation to find out if this is really true. And so we challenge you to go to Tim's website, to go to my website at RadioLiberty.com, and pull down our information on genetic engineering and population control. We don't go a great deal into vaccinations, although we really are going to have to do some newsletters on that. But, of course, we have tape sets, and we have a number of books and other items that will give you the information you're not going to get elsewhere. So we implore you, check out the facts. It is your child, it is your grandchildren, and perhaps even yourself who are in jeopardy. So, anyway, we do hope that many of you will go to our website. You can listen to our programs there on the Internet, directly or indirectly, 5 hours a day. And we're 4 hours a day on shortwave. And please encourage others to listen to our program, because we're trying to introduce them into this truly spiritual battle that's being fought for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. Again, our website, www.radioliberty.com. If you'd like to know who really runs the world and who's behind everything going on, let me suggest my newsletter, the June newsletter. It's called The Occult Hierarchy, Part 2. You can pull it down on our website under the section on newsletters, or if you'd like to get a free copy of the newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then please remember that we're having our annual Radio Liberty Conference here. It's going to be in the Monterey Bay area at Aptos Seascape Golf Course. It's going to be on the 19th of November. If you're planning on coming, we have to know ahead of time. We're serving lunch. And we've got a great lineup of speakers. I think you'll find it fascinating. And you need to understand the true nature of what is aligned against us. So if you can possibly come or bring somebody else, the 19th of November, and that's all day long on Saturday, and it'll be starting early in the morning and going to late in the evening, and we look forward to seeing you. And again, the number to call, 1-800-544-8927. Same number you would call if you want to get a free copy of our newsletter. Then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and ministers, but please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection, because we're on the front lines of this battle 5 hours every day, and then, of course, really full-time, trying to awaken the American people as to the true nature of the dark and sinister forces that we are aligned against. So, again, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, and our webpage, www.radioliberty.com. Until tomorrow at the same time, we'll be back with you. Once again, this is Dr. Stan saying goodnight, and may the Lord be with you.